Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter at @redrock_bball. And today we're doing the second in the season preview series. First one we did the other day, which I encourage you all to check out, was the Boston Celtics. Now we're heading a little bit west of Boston. We're going to be talking about the Cleveland Cavaliers in today's podcast. And to do that, I'm joined by Chris Manning. Chris, how are you going?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on, Josh.
Not a problem. It's good to have you here. Now, before we get started, where can everybody find your work?
You can find me at Hardwood Paroxysm and Fear the Sword for NBA stuff. I'm on board with all the other miscellany. And you can find me on Twitter at CWMWrites.
Yeah, so go ahead and follow Chris over there if you aren't already and check out the stuff that he does on Hardwood Paroxysm and on Fear the Sword, which is a great Cavs site over on SB Nation. And before we get started into talking about the Cavs, Chris, just want to touch on a couple of things. Welcome if you are listening to this via Hardwood Paroxysm. And just a quick thing that I need to bring out. This podcast and all future podcasts are now going to be brought to you by Basketball Monster. I am now going to be working at Basketball Monster. So everybody who doesn't know what that is, I encourage you to go and check out Basketball Monster. It's a great fantasy website with a heap of tools and rankings. So I'm going to be working over there. The podcast is going to be part of Basketball Monster. I'm going to be writing articles over there, going to be responsible for helping with the projections and doing a whole heap of stuff over there. So you can now find my stuff over on Basketball Monster as well. And the subscriptions to that open up. They should be at over the weekend or the start of next week. But you'll find all my stuff will be over there as well now. So I just wanted to get that quickly out there. Chris, the Cavs, you're in Ohio, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you've got first-hand information, you've got first-hand knowledge of seeing these guys and knowing a bit about this team. Let's get into what is a really interesting team who basically, I would say they shored up themselves for next season. Is that an accurate statement of their off-season?
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, if you look at the first thing is you get Mo Williams, you bring him back for a second tour, Kyrie Irving, might be him, maybe out to January. I doubt it's that long. It's just a hunch. I have no idea, but it's just, I doubt he's out that long. But you have a legit backup point guard. I love Matthew Dellavedova, but he's actually if you're giving him a position, he's a two guard. He's just not a point guard. You bring back Shump, you bring back J.R. Smith, you also get Richard Jefferson, and you don't really know what you're going to get with Richard Jefferson because age catches up to people at all times. And look what happened with Sean Marion and Mike Miller last year. But he, in theory, he's a guy you can have start for LeBron on certain nights. He gives you really good minutes as a backup three, and they didn't have that last year. This team last year had, in the playoffs, 7-8 guys. They have 10 at this point, maybe 10. It depends on Nerzen Barajas' health, too, but they also did get Sasha Kahn. So I think this team saw what worked last year, got what they need. They think they needed to kind of improve on that, and I think the result should be a deeper, better team,
yeah. I think. I would agree with that. Their depth was sorely tested last season in the playoffs. We saw that when everyone started going down. And then, yeah, Dellavedova can have one or two big games. And that's fine for one or two games, but he can't carry a team through the finals. And now you said all these names you've mentioned, these are legitimately not even just minor upgrades, like big upgrades in certain positions, especially with the Mo Williams one. We are going to touch on Kyrie Irving a little bit more later on because I'm in your camp. I don't think that he's going to be out till January, but we'll touch on that. We talked about the key additions to this team. Mo Williams, Richard Jefferson, Sasha Kahn. Now, Mo Williams is going to have an impact. I think it's safe to say, let's talk Kyrie now anyway. We're talking Mo Williams because it sort of ties in together. It's safe to say that we probably don't think that we're going to see Kyrie at the very start of the season. Now, we don't know what that is. But to me, in reading that article that was put out there, when it says that he's doubtful for opening night, but then he might not play till January, that's a big difference. That's 2 months. So I don't see how you can be a chance to play at the end of October, but then also you're not playing until January. That to me just, it doesn't seem to add up. Is that how you read it?
Yeah, I mean, well, if you look at his injury timetable, he has a fractured kneecap, and the original timetable is 3 to 4 months. So that would put, if he, you know, it hurt in early June, so that would put him really close to the start of the season, end of October, early November at worst. January seems like something actually went wrong, or they're just being super, super cautious with him.
Yep.
Healthy, I just don't see the reason not to bring him back. And it just, I would like to know if he is out the January, why? Is it because there's something really wrong? Is it because they just want to rest him? I bet you he misses the first like 4 or 5 games and they bring him back after just a little bit. If he's not like fully comfortable by the start of the season or you just want to let him rest, that's fine. But January, January is just such a weird thing and that'd be concerning. I mean, cause if it is January, you're missing, you know, it's not like the hugest, most important part of the season, but it's a huge stretch of games. And if he's out for that long, you know, and the East is better this year, the Cavs should be the best team in the East. But like, if you have just started the season where you're adjusting without Kyrie, even with the additions, I mean, I don't think that's worth resting him just so you're better for the playoffs. Like, I think you'd want to have the 1 seed, not a 2 or 3 seed if you kind of have a tough early going.
Yeah, and it's not just the 1 seed in the East. We're talking about that they could be that good that they could power through the Eastern Conference and get a number 1 seed overall. So they, you know, thinking yeah, their full strength, they get back to the finals, but they'd want to have that home court advantage in the finals.
Yeah.
They can get the 1 seed in the East, and they probably had to do it if Irving sits out a little bit of time. But the other thing that it does as well is if Irving sits out the first 2 months, which again, we both think that that is not the likely scenario. If he does sit out that time, that means that they're probably going to lose more games than what they would have if he had have played. That's also going to mean that as they head into January, February, March, they're not going to be as far ahead in their win-loss record as they would like to be. Therefore, less chance of them resting James and resting Love and managing their minutes down the stretch, which again then could impact what they do in the playoffs if those guys haven't been managed correctly or the way that they would like to. Instead, if they had like a 10-game lead heading into April, they're going to...
Yeah.
To me, it seems weird. Like, I think that Kyrie is going to miss some time. I think that he might miss, a week, 2 weeks. He might miss 10 games. That'd be my guess. But to me, we have heard nothing to say that anything has gone wrong with this injury. He is continually saying, I don't want to put a timetable on it, but he has been doing some work from what I understand. And that article that came out, it said, multiple sources said that he's in doubt for opening night. And one person said, he might not play till January. And it didn't say it was a team source. It didn't say who it was. It just said one person, one source says it may be January. That to me is very tenuous to go off. And I'm not basing anything on that in my fantasy leagues where I'm going, I'm dropping Kyrie down. Now, it probably don't want to take him in the first round, but I still have confidence with him in the second or third round because I just don't think he's going to be missing 30 games. I think he's missing 10 games maximum. And at the start of the season, that's easily doable. Now, As you know, Chris, we're doing this live across YouTube. So I had a question come in as we're talking Kyrie here from @Starks_industry. My man Robert Downey Jr. sending a tweet in. Do we assume that Kyrie won't play more than 30 minutes when healthy? I wouldn't assume that.
No, I mean, I think certain nights, yeah, that's totally cool. Like if you're playing the 76ers and you're up by 20 in the third quarter, just sit him. You know, there's no reason. Sit LeBron, sit Love, sit Kyrie. But the Cavs are just so, like, Mo Williams is a really good signing.
Yep.
Matthew Dellavedova can play really good minutes, and you can get away with not playing Kyrie 30 minutes, but why would, like, there's just a drop-off there. Last season, he became, if you just look at his shooting numbers were up across the board. He became this really, really efficient player, whether he was attacking in the pick and roll, attacking in isolation, which he's one of the best, like, 3 players in the league at. And he became really, really good off the ball, which was huge for playing with LeBron James. He's just so good. And if he's healthy, playing him under 30 minutes a night is just being detrimental. I mean, you have to have him on the floor as much as possible. It's like if in the perfect world in the playoffs, you're playing Kyrie, LeBron, and Love like all 35 to 40 minutes a game. LeBron's probably playing the whole game. Kyrie might be playing 44. And Kevin Love should be playing at least 35.
And I think Kyrie's in a situation where he is underrated for how actually good he is. And we talk about, you can say that he might play under 30 minutes, but you would never say that for Kevin Durant, that, okay, Kevin Durant's coming back from a broken foot. He's going to play under 30 minutes a night. Now, Kyrie's not quite in Durant's class, but he's not that far away from it. Yeah, he is a legit star in this league, and he's not a guy that they're going to put under 30 minutes because he's that good. He's not in that situation where they have to rest him. So I've got they said they're going to reduce his minutes, but they also said that LeBron was going to play limited minutes last year, and he was playing 40-minute stretches for big chunks of the season. It just didn't happen. I don't see it happening. It might be 1 or 2 minutes less for Kyrie, but it's not going to be a massive reduction.
Yeah, I just can't see it being a massive reduction. It just doesn't, unless he's like hurt. That's the only situation. And then again, we're not even in a training camp yet where he's worked out with the Cavs constantly. So it's like, how do you even know at this point? It still just feels very up in the air to me with Kyrie, but it's like a good up in the air.
Mo Williams comes across now. He's going to be an interesting guy for fantasy leagues, especially in that early part of the season where Corey might miss that 1 or 2 weeks. Overall, he was really good last year. For Minnesota, he put up that crazy 52-point night. Even when he went to Charlotte, though, he was able to put up pretty good numbers, either coming off the bench or starting. And I think that he's going to be in a similar role here. The difference is that in those situations in Minnesota and in Charlotte, he was able to play in a two-point guard backcourt. But the Cavs have another couple of options that play in the backcourt as well, with J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert as well. So it's not like they're going to be able to play Kyrie and Mo big chunks together because they've got to give minutes to those other guys. But do you see Mo Williams in line for what sort of a role, like what sort of minute role do you think that he's looking at?
I would guess like 15 to 20. That's okay. Kind of my guess. It's like a sweet spot. I think you can play. I think ideally you don't play with JR at all, just because I think they both do is sort of overlapping in a way that I don't think would make sense to play them together. I think the best lineups for Mo are where he's either as a two, like a really small two, and they're playing just trying to score a bunch between Kyrie and LeBron, or he's on the floor with LeBron and then Shumpert, and he's like the nominal point guard. I think you want to put him in lineups where he's with LeBron, just because I think that if he's not on the floor with LeBron or with Kyrie or LeBron, I think he potentially gets to a point where if you look at how he's been the last couple of years, he's been really fun, but he's also been not as efficient as he was during his peak years in Cleveland. He's become a little bit more of a gunner.
Yep.
And I think for the Cavs to get the best thing out of him, it's to make him more, to curtail him in a little bit, get his shot attempts down, have him take more threes and pass a little bit more. Playing with LeBron should do that. I mean, if you're on the floor with LeBron, LeBron's going to dominate the ball. He's going to probably lead the offense in a lot of ways. I'd probably say playing 15, 20 minutes, playing with LeBron as much as possible, and don't play him with JR. Play him with Shumpert, because Shumpert can hide his defensive problems.
Yeah, I think that's a good pairing, having him with Shumpert there, definitely. But you're right, him and JR, they're going to take a lot of shots from three. They're going to take some bad shots. They're going to miss some shots. And you're right, their skill level overlaps a little bit. The other two guys who came across or joined the team this year, Richard Jefferson, he's not going to have a huge fantasy impact at all. He's probably way down the list for really, really deep leagues, unless there's a situation where something goes horribly wrong and they are forced to start him. They're obviously not going to want to do that. Sasha Kohn's the interesting one. He's been playing in Europe for the last few years. He just adds to that big man, not mess necessarily. I think that the Cavs' big man situation is not, it's not clear, if that makes sense. I know that sounds stupid because we know Mozgov's the starter and we know Thompson's able to do, but they never seem to get enough minutes to be really relevant for most fantasy leagues. Both of them played about 25, 26 minutes a game last year, and then you got Varejao coming into the mix and Sasha Kohn coming into the mix as well. How do you see them using Kohn when he comes across?
I think it depends on Varejao. I mean, I think with Varejao, he's been injured so much. He's coming off an injury that ruins people's careers. He tore his Achilles or ruptured his Achilles, depending on how you want to phrase it. I think they called it a rupture. He already didn't really look good last year as it is. And even if Andy Varejao is awesome, and if there's anyone that's going to come back from that and try to come back from that, it's probably him. But if he doesn't look good early or he gets hurt again, which, you know, has happened, and he's on the sidelines, I think that's where Kohn comes in. I think there's probably not a ton of minutes for him or Andy, I think, because you want to play Kevin Love a lot. You want to play Mozgov a lot as your rim protector, and you want to play Tristan a lot because he's awesome and he can play a small ball five, and him and Love together actually works really, really well. Or you can play him as a small ball five with LeBron as your nominal four, and Richard Jefferson slides in at three or something. You can do kind of funky things with Thompson, and you do the same things with Love, but in different ways. So if Kohn's going to play, I think it's against teams that have really big front courts. Like if they're playing the Grizzlies and they need to play four bigs and Varejao's out or something, I think Kohn plays there because it's maybe harder to go small against Memphis. As Memphis is playing well. If the Cavs can go small and run Memphis off the court, that's great. But if you need another big to give you minutes or fouls or something, especially in the regular season, I think that's where Kohn kind of comes in. But like 10 minutes a game seems to be sort of 10, 15 minutes on a good night seems to kind of be where he would go.
I think to the way I sort of look at what he's going to do is, and this is not a great sign for anything that he's able to do, but he's going to replace the minutes that Brendan Haywood played and that Kendrick Perkins played. And that's not much, and they didn't play much of a role, but they played somewhat of a role, and he's going to sort of do that. He can get in there, he can bang down low, he can fight for some rebounds. His offensive game is not great, but it's better than what Perkins was able to offer. He's going to just be that backup guy because We know that Varejao is coming back off this injury, so he's going to be insurance policy. It's going to take a lot for him to actually get significant minutes to be a key contributor to this team. We talk about guys that left this team. There's no real big losses here. Sean Marion retired. Mike Miller's gone. Kendrick Perkins is headed to New Orleans. And Brendan Haywood went in that trade that we saw coming for ages just to try and get rid of him and clear him off the books. But it doesn't really impact this team in any way, I don't think. You might have some argument with me there, but I don't think there's any impact in any of those losses, do you?
The only thing I'll miss is, I think the Cavs will miss, rather, is Perk was a really, really good locker room guy. I mean, for as not good as he is, teammates love him. And he was kind of a guy you could have in the locker room. But, I mean, you have LeBron, I mean, for whatever. And you have Mo. Mo's a good locker room guy. The guys love Joe. They seem to be like a pretty good group. So, I mean, I don't think there's any difference. I mean, Brendan Haywood watch was kind of fun to see if he was actually going to get in or not. But, I mean, you can play like Varejao Health Watch or something now instead, which is a little sadder, but still kind of fun.
Yeah, that's true. Because Varejao is so frustrating just because we know that when he is playing, he's able to put up really good numbers and be a really key contributor. The problem is that he's just been shown to be brittle and fragile over, you know, however many years it is now. And you're just waiting for, okay, Anderson Varejao's played a good month, he's going to go down in the next 2 weeks. And that's basically what it's been like for the last 3 to 4 years, I'd say. Now, the way this team's assembled, Chris, is it's very veteran-heavy. There's not a lot in terms of draft picks or young guys coming through on this team. So when I look at this section here, we're talking about the draft picks from the last couple of years for people who play in deeper dynasty leagues, the names, it's pretty thin. We've got Joe Harris, who's the only guy that's on the roster from the 2014 NBA draft. Then we've got from this year, 2 second-round picks, Seti Osman and Sir Dominic Poynter. At least Poynter has the accolade of having the greatest name in the draft. I would have to agree. Well, I'd have to say that. Do you agree that that is that's probably his most redeeming feature at this point?
Yeah. the rookies are just the any rookies they've taken in the past 2 years are just like Harris was bad in summer league, and it was coming into his second year. Like he just wasn't very like in summer league, and Osman's like not going to come over. Rakeem, you know, like all the guys they took. It's on purpose, but it's sort of like it takes some of the fun out of it, you know. Like you just want to see the guys and like kind of evaluate them. And Kyrie is like the youngest guy, which is sort of like its own kind of its own interesting thing because he's, you know, like 23, 24, but no rookies. Yeah, that's
the guy that has slight interest to me that wasn't drafted but is signed for a training camp deal is Quinn Cook from Duke, who had he was a very good player last season at Duke. It's a bit surprising to me that he didn't get picked somewhere in the second round. And if this Irving injury turns into something more serious, they might be looking to bring him on as another guy who can help create stuff on offense. And not like, because Dellavedova is not a great creator. His ability comes as a defender. Yeah. Cook might be able to come in there and slide in, but really, I think that if Cook was able to get some minutes, then the benefit for him in his career would be on another team in another year or so. Like, I don't think there's any real path for him to get any decent minutes on this Cavs team in the next 3 to 4 seasons. So all these young guys, there's not a lot to like about them. Even if they were to play minutes, they were picked in the second round for a reason.
Yeah. Well, and Quinn Cook's kind of interesting because he is a Duke guy. He, you know, obviously, as you said, he was really good at Duke. Like he was kind of like a good player.
He was.
Yeah. Like he's a good college player. Maybe that doesn't always translate to the NBA, but you look at him and you think maybe there's like he's a guy that they take a flyer on as like a potential guy you develop as a legit backup point guy, like a Mo Williams successor in 2-3 years or something like that. Like maybe that's the path. I kind of wouldn't mind him sticking around. I have more interest in him sticking around than Sir Dominic Poynter, who they took in the second round this year, because Poynter can't shoot and he's like years away from being able to shoot. He's already like 22 or 23 years old.
Yeah.
He's like a guy who could actually develop. And I don't know how they do that, or, you know, they obviously have a better insight of seeing this guy all the time than I do, but it's just, I agree with you. I think he's kind of interesting, and it's kind of, his best case is he does really well in Cleveland, like proves himself, and some team gives him like more money and a promise of, hey, you're going to be our backup or something in a year or two.
Yeah, I can see something like that. Look, it's not the exact same situation, but it sort of happened a little bit with Grievous Vasquez when he didn't get any playing time when he entered the league, ended up in New Orleans, got himself into a starting job there, led the league in assists that season, turn himself into a big contract with Sacramento, and he's looking for free agency next year, and he'll find himself a place in the league as a backup, but didn't come into the league very heralded. Like he was drafted, unlike Cook, but it was that situation where he just needed an opportunity. Cook's not going to get it in Cleveland, but he could show in limited time that he is worthy of it, and you know, get himself a backup role, translate that into something more, and then go from there. I think that's probably where his future lies, but the other guys I don't hold too much hope for. Now, Chris, the next bit we look at breakout guys, so players who we think might go from being a good player to a great player, or a player that goes from being an irrelevant player and into a decent sort of role player. I racked my brain with this one, and I really struggled to find who that was going to be that sort of fit the criteria that I've got in my head. How did you approach this?
Sorry, we're not following. Can you repeat that for me?
Yeah, just I'm looking at that sort of a breakout player, so the player who goes from being a good player to a great player, or a player who goes from an irrelevant sort of player into a decent role player. I find it hard to see who that player is on this team who's going to take a big step up, because everybody's role seems solidified and pretty much the same as it was last season. Do you see someone who can take a step?
I'm going to get really weird with this, okay. Because that's good. A little teaser. SB Nation is doing, we're doing a theme day later this week of the breakout player. And we, as for this one, we're like, who are we going to pick? My first thought, just because of, and this is a little bit of like media narrative and whatever, which I don't like falling into. It's like kind of Love. Probably will be like a lot better next year. Okay. Like that is my idea. It's like the Kevin Love that played last year was just like a spot up shooter, and he took like a lot of the flack. Like I thought it was going to be Kyrie that took the most. You know, it was like the third guy out of that because he was least established, but it ended up being Love. And it's based on how he's used. This assumes that they use him a little bit differently this year. This assumes they give him some elbow touches or give him some post-up touches. Things that he's really good at that they didn't really do a lot last year. And I think Kevin Love in year two probably is a lot better than Kevin Love in year one. And I think that's almost the closest thing you have to a breakout player, which isn't really like, it's like a cop-out answer, but it's the only, like, Shumpert, I expect Shumpert to be the guy that you think maybe takes the biggest step.
Yep.
And becomes like really good. Because Thompson did that last year. So, and Thompson, that's about as big of a jump as I think Thompson can make, unless he starts being able to shoot, which I don't really see.
I doubt that.
Yeah, his stroke is just kind of a mess even with the switch hands. But Schumbert's probably not going to be like incrementally better unless he becomes a consistent shooter. Love to me seems the guy who could have the biggest just improved year, and that maybe quantifies as a breakout. It's a weird answer, but you're right. There isn't just like everyone has kind of a role. They're like built to win right now. There just isn't a guy that you look at and can go, hey, he's going to get like way, way better. Like Kyrie's like his breakout, he's already broken out. Like he could get better, but there isn't a breakout. Love's like it's like a rebound, not a breakout. It's weird. It's kind of, it's like the same thing with young guys. It's just weird to not have that guy you think this guy can get way, way better. And it's kind of weird to look at that and think that. Like, guys can get better, but it won't be unexpected if they do.
Yeah, Love's a good one, because I think something we need to take into consideration, this is something that during last season I harped on, not with Love necessarily, but with lots of players, is that he was in a new environment. He was with a new coach. He was with new teammates. He was living in a new city. And all that sort of stuff, these guys, you say, like, they're professionals. They've got to be able to deal with it. But they're all humans as well. They've got to deal with relocating themselves, potentially living away from family for a little bit as they get themselves settled. Wasn't there at the start of the offseason. Didn't miss a huge amount. He was there for camp, but he still wasn't there the whole time. He didn't know what team he was going to be playing for all the way through the offseason until he was traded. And that takes settling in with a first-time coach, with LeBron coming back. And I would imagine that things get better. It's like the longer you're in a job in the same location, you get better. You get more comfortable knowing where things are and where people move to and who acts like this and who's got this personality. And I think all that works for him in terms of him getting better. Now, last season, it was a massive drop-off in terms of what he was able to do. And I was going to say, I think you might be able to get him as a bargain in fantasy leagues this year, but I don't think that's going to be the case, because at the moment, Yahoo's got him ranked 22nd. Last year, he finished 50th. I think he's going to be better than that, but I don't think he's going to be as good as 22nd. So if you're looking to pick him at that point, I think you're probably going to be losing out. But if you can get him closer to 40, which is, I've currently got him ranked about 40th at the moment, I think that's probably a good spot, but
yeah,
it'd be better than last year.
Right. Yeah, I mean, like, it's just because it's like I think he gets better, but you look at this Cavs team and you don't see him being able to take like a huge jump where he goes back to being the alpha. Like, he's probably, just because of what position he plays and who the other two guys are, he's not going to get the ball as much.
Yep.
And for the Cavs to just completely throw everything out the window that they did last year when they were, you know, from that certain stretch where like 100, it was like over 120 or something points per 100 possessions. It was just insane. For them to throw it all out the window, even if it was kind of hard to watch in times and stagnant with all the isolation ball, to like get rid of that would be crazy, you know?
Yep.
So, I mean, I think you'll probably see him better. I just personally want to see him get five. If he gets 5 to 7 elbow touches a game and like 2-3 post-ups, like he just gets like more touches. It doesn't necessarily mean shots, but just touches. I think he's just way better and he just looks better and it makes the Cavs as a whole better. But if he gets elbow touches, you just remember what he did in Minnesota. He's unbelievable from the elbow. Yeah. Like, he can pass out of the elbow. He's awesome. Like, if Kevin Love is in a different world, he's like a top one or two. He's like clearly a number one guy on a team. He was with the Wolves. He could have been in the right situation if he would have went somewhere this summer or went signed a one-year deal and went somewhere next summer. Like, he's really that good, and it speaks to the situation and who he's playing with and the talent of those two other guys, with LeBron being still the best player in the world until Anthony Davis takes over everybody and destroys the world.
Yep.
But he's there.
No, look, I think we forget, like, it was only a year ago when he was in Minnesota that he was just ridiculous. Like, the numbers he would put up, you know, we'd see, like, things come across, okay, Kevin Love got 30 rebounds, and you go, okay. And you don't, you think that's just, you know, not normal for him, but it's something where you go, that is not completely crazy. It's not as crazy as Corey Brewer scoring 50 points. Like, he'd do it regularly. He'd go out there and go, I'm going to have 35 and 18. And that'd be, okay, that's a relatively normal Kevin Love game. Well, then I'll throw in 6 assists and I'll hit 3 threes. And this guy was just a really, really, you know, special talent on a bad team. And we knew he was going to take a drop off, but he wasn't horrendous, but his numbers did take a backseat. I think they bounced back to a degree this season, not to Minnesota levels, but he will be better than what he was last season. I'm pretty sure of that.
Yeah.
Now we want to look at guys now who I've got as sleeper players for fantasy drafts based on where they're currently being drafted and how I think they'll go, and guys who I think are a bit overvalued. So Mo Williams is currently sitting at, I'm going to combine these together, because Mo Williams is currently being drafted at pick 138, and Matthew Dellavedova is currently being drafted at pick 125. That, to me, is ludicrous. If you're picking Matthew Dellavedova in any regular 10 or 12 team fantasy leagues, I think that you're doing it very, very wrongly. Mo Williams should, look, I'd be happy with Mo Williams at 125, which is where Dellavedova is going, but he's currently sitting at 138. Dellavedova should have no place in regular fantasy leagues, and I don't know why he's going so much higher than Mo Williams. I don't know how in any situation he could be seen to be able to produce more numbers than what Mo Williams is going to do, even with Irving potentially missing time. I can't see it happening. To me, it just feels ludicrous. Do you agree? Am I missing something with Dellavedova?
Oh, no, you're not. Delly has a special place on like with Cavs fans and, you know, with the Cavs, like, because of what he does and just how gritty he is. But if you look at his numbers from this was his shooting numbers, his numbers from last year: 67 games, made 36.2% of his shots, made 40.7% of his threes. His overall shooting number percentage was down. His 3 percentage went up. In slightly more attempts per game, which is good. But he's only taking 2.5 threes a game. He's taking under 5 shots a game. He's not going to score more than 5 points in a game. He's not. His assists aren't going to be always, you know, like a straight up assist. He might get a hockey assist, which I've only played in one league ever that counted hockey assists. And it was because, like, the guy that ran the league, like, hacked the rules because he, like, loves the idea of counting hockey assists. And they count for almost nothing. I don't know. Mo Williams at that range seems like it could be worth it. But with Dellavedova, I agree. Unless you're playing in a league that's just so big that you have to draft, like, almost, like, full teams or something, like, just every player, which would be, like, a huge, huge league, I just don't see the point. I mean, he's going to play, but he's not going to, like, do basketball things that result in points.
That's like, he got over 20 minutes a game last year, and now Mo Williams comes in, so he's probably going to get less than that. I've got him ranked outside the top 300 for reference of people picking him at 120. That just, I don't know, unless it's just extremely skewed by Australians who are just looking to draft teams exclusively with guys from Australia in it. I think you're going to go very, very poorly if you end up picking Dellavedova at that last pick, because even if you go, okay, it's the last pick in the draft, I think maybe he's going to blow up. He's just not that guy. He's not talented enough. He's scrappy, he's gritty, he's determined, but I don't know of any fantasy leagues that count determination as a category. He's just not going to do it. It's just, yeah, it's a weird one for me. It'll probably correct itself at some point over the next month or so, but Dellavedova's not the guy for me.
He'd be the top player on the board if it was your leading categories were grit and determination. Like, yeah. I can't even think off the top of my head who'd be like the guys that are just like maybe like Kirk or Tony Allen. It'd be him and Tony Allen as like your two best players. Neither can really shoot, but they're really gritty and they play like really hard and annoy other teams. It could be those two guys.
That's pretty much where it is. And unfortunately, I don't think that many leagues count that. So we can discount Dellavedova from most fantasy discussions. All right. The next section I want to have a look at is a guy whose fantasy upside is limited by his playing time. So in a situation where he's in a place where he's in a platoon, he's got his minutes capped, whatever it is, he's on the bench behind a star. Who's a guy on this team that if something was to happen and he was to go and get playing time, then he becomes a real valuable fantasy sort of guy?
I'm going to go JR.
Okay.
Like I think there's if you look at JR last year, off pure numbers, he wasn't really actually much better with the Cavs than he was with the Knicks. It looks better when he's playing with LeBron and he's getting shots off the ball and all those things. But he really wasn't much better. Just per shooting numbers, he played 6 more minutes a game, took 4 more threes and made them at a higher rate, but he was making like 39% of them, which isn't quite in the, automatic. This dude's going to like hit every three he takes kind of thing. He's still kind of streaky. He wasn't good in the playoffs.
No, aside from
the thing he did against the Celtics by striking Jay Crowder in the face to just sort of disappearing against the Warriors. Like, you don't know your game with JR, but if Kyrie's out for, a month or something, and if he starts especially, he was really good as a starter last year, and I think you could kind of go back to that and, pair Shumpert and Mo Williams as your bench guy. He's a guy that I think early on, if Kyrie is out, could get you some early return. He's going to get shots. He's going to take shots. Maybe he gets into a groove early. You might know in the first 5 games if that's like an awful decision or if it's a good decision. But he's a guy that if he gets time, maybe works. But it's also just you're rolling the dice. I think for all the Cavs guys that might get more time and are going to shoot enough or do enough things that count to get points, they're all sort of streaky. There isn't one guy that I look at that is like, hey, if this guy gets a bigger role, or he's going to get a bunch. Like, if Mo Williams gets more minutes, he's probably going to become more inefficient. And then there you lose some of the value of Mo Williams.
The J.R. Smith one's interesting to me because he's a player who has a reputation as a gunner and a chucker. And that's all fine because he can do that. And he can have those games where he just goes, 1 of 10 from three and puts up some bad shots. And that's a bit what he is. But he's not Nick Young like that, who will go out and won't rebound and won't pass and won't play defense. So J.R. Smith averaged over 2 threes a game, but he also averaged almost 3 assists a game last year. He got over a steal a game. He got 3 rebounds a game. And when you compare to other guys who are labeled into that chucker category, like Young, when they go out and have 1 assist a game and they have 2 rebounds and 0.5 steal, he provides a lot more value across the board than what those guys do because he is able to do other things. He can distribute. He had games last year where he'd have 5+ assists. They don't happen all the time, but they did happen. And for when we talk, we look at Kevin Love in Minnesota and look at this guy providing such great numbers, assist numbers. J.R. Smith averaged more assists than what Kevin Love did last year. I don't think many people would know that or would have predicted that would happen because Smith's got that reputation of being a guy who's a ball hog, who's just chucking it up and not looking to actually do stuff in the offense when he did a little bit of that as well. So he's a little bit underrated in that sense, and I agree. If he gets some decent minutes, he can put up some numbers. The guy that I think that we saw it last year to a degree when Kevin Love went out is Tristan Thompson. If he goes in there and plays 35 minutes, you can almost ride in a double-double for him. 12 points, 12 rebounds. You're going to get a pretty high field goal percentage because he can't shoot, but he's taking close-in shots and he's dunking and he's doing putbacks and all that sort of stuff. And he might block you a shot a game. Now, that's not fantastic, but he's currently limited by this big man rotation. They got Love, Mozgov, Varejao, all those guys. It's going to keep Thompson down at 25, 26 minutes. If he goes out there and one of those guys is injured and he has to play big minutes like we saw him do in the playoffs and even before that when Love had all those back problems through the season, Thompson would go in there, he'd get a double-double, he'd block a couple of shots, and you were done with it. And that would allow him to put up some pretty decent numbers. He became a really good daily fantasy play in those situations, and he was an awesome guy to stream in your fantasy leagues when you knew that he was going to start and he was going to play 30 to 33 minutes. You knew what you were going to get, and he was going to do it pretty consistently. He was also going to be a terrible free throw shooter, but you have to sort of work that into what you're considering when looking at him. But he's a guy that when he's out there and getting minutes, he's definitely worth it. You could say the same for Timofey Mozgov as well. If someone else is out and he has to play 30 minutes, he can go out there and put up some pretty big numbers. But he was quite inconsistent at times, and the way that Blatt used him in terms of his minutes was inconsistent too, and I don't imagine that changing a huge amount.
Yeah, and because Thompson offers the versatility, and I love that you mentioned the dunks of second-hand shots, because he is super good at getting offensive rebounds, yeah. And it's insane. Like there's gifs of him getting the ball, like he's like outside, he's near the corner 3-point line, and he works away and past two guys and gets an offensive rebound. That said, he has this really bad habit of dribbling two or three times before going right back up. And if he just starts going right back up, that might be another bucket a game. And it's not huge, but another bucket, a bucket is a bucket. And if he scores like that, that still helps. And if he maybe gets him to the foul line, and maybe he shoots like a little bit better, but those are like little things, but I think they kind of do matter if it's a close decision. Like there's upside. There's still upside there.
Yeah, definitely. He's still only young. He's on his rookie year. He's on his rookie deal still. It's just expiring now. We don't exactly know what's happening, and that's still a weird situation in itself. But he's definitely got room to improve. Now, we've gone through and we've talked about pretty much everyone on this roster, Imran Shumpert, J.R. Smith. There's one guy we haven't talked about yet, Chris, and it's probably the most important player, not even in this team, but in the NBA, and that's LeBron James. Now, he was... I was going to say disappointing, but that's not the right word, because he was fantastic for this team, obviously. Took them all the way as far as he could. He was amazing during the playoffs. But we saw a big change in his stat line that he was able to produce, especially his efficiency numbers. And I don't know if you noticed this, but when I watched him play, when we used to watch him play back in his early Cleveland days, back in his Miami days, when he got to the rack, it was automatic. Like you knew it was going in. But this last season, he wasn't connecting on those easy layups when he's still able to get to the rim, but they weren't falling. Did you notice that as something where it's why are these shots not falling for LeBron?
Yeah, it was different. I don't know if it was something that. If it's the final of the minutes are catching up to thing, because he's 30 and he's played, if you look at his minutes, last year was the lowest minutes per game total he's ever had in his career. He played 36.1 yeah. minutes a game last year, and that's less than he's ever played, which is crazy. If you just like thinking about that for a second, I hadn't even realized that until I looked at this, but it's kind of crazy. Look at it, and his 2-point percentage was down to 53.6. He in Miami in the for last year's Miami, he was at 60.2. The first year they won a title, then at 62.2. The year they won the title,
those numbers are crazy good. Look, they're insane. But yeah, he dropped off significantly.
Yeah. But I kind of feel like he probably does get kind of a bounce back on things. You look back, with the 2-point percentage back when he was younger, he was. This is like back to like. 07-08 LeBron, like it's around those numbers. It's like right before he left, he got up to 56 and then was like hovering, and then he just was a destroyer of worlds the last 2 years of Miami. Like that was probably peak LeBron with everything going on. I think this year those probably go up though. I just think you look at him and I think you think he probably comes in fresher. That's my hope at least, that he spent all summer kind of recouping, that he's head off since June. He's been able to, hang out on banana boats with Chris Paul and Dwayne and just kind of get some relaxing in the sun. And he comes back with fresh legs. It might be a little fatigued still because he does play so much, but he can take I'm cool with him taking another 2 weeks off each vacation, or at least just sitting on the bench for 2 weeks and getting his legs under him. The disappointing thing is kind of a thing with LeBron, because I think you watch him play and you feel like he's capable of so much more. But he's doing things that almost no other player in the league can do. And like there's things he does that no other player in the league can do.
Yep.
And you watch him do things and you're like, I want him to do more. And it's really, really hard to expect that of someone, you know, but it's LeBron and he's, you know, the best player of this generation, maybe the, in the conversation for the best ever. And you just want him to do more. And I think hitting, dunking a guy again, or at least getting layups and like that, or at least getting fouled and going to the free throw line and hitting a, his free throw as a, at a higher than 71, at more than 71%, which he's never really done. He's up this, he gets high for like 78%. But if he can do that, it's just, you want him to be that much better, which is kind of crazy. Like, yeah. It's crazy to expect that of LeBron, but it's just true.
No, when someone shows what, that they do have that ability, you always want them to give more and more and more. And at some point, he's going to slow down. I don't know if that was the beginning of the slowdown. I don't think it is, but it's definitely worth noting of how much that field goal percentage dropped. Because, look, he was an awesome fantasy player for many years. He was the number one guy, the number two guy. He had a bit of a drop-off last year, and because so much of his value came from his ability to shoot a massive field goal percentage on a huge amount of attempts. So I've talked about it in previous shows about the Z scores and standard scores, and he was at plus three in his field goal percentage the last couple of years, which means that, yeah, he was better than over 99% or three standard deviations better than what the average was in that category. So you have him, he's just basically almost winning you that category almost on his own. But last year dropped down massively. It's to less than a standard score of one, down to 0.7, and that's not big, considering that his free throws also dropped down by 0.4%, down from 75 to 71, and then he becomes more of a liability from the free throw line. And that is what, you know, drops him down from being a top two, top three fantasy guy to being a guy that's the end of the first round, the back of the top 10. I've currently got him at number 7 on my rankings at the moment. People will take him higher. Someone will take him at pick 2 or pick 3 or pick 5. I think that you're wrong if you're doing that, but I can see why, because he does offer a lot, and it really depends on how you're looking to build your team. But just be wary of those efficiency numbers that did drop off when we saw other guys like Kyrie, who got a big boost in his efficiency when LeBron was there. LeBron actually went the other way, paired up with these guys. So it is something to keep an eye on, but it's definitely not the end for LeBron or anything like that.
I think one way in theory, he could kind of go up, but in a way you wouldn't expect, to be his assist numbers just go up. He's the best passer on the Cavs. Like, yep. He's got the best court vision and all this stuff. We've talked about Kevin Love already, and we've touched on Kyrie too. LeBron's a guy that if he like really, really wanted to, could kind of become more of a functional point guard because of how good he is passing. And I think it's something he's going to do as he gets older, just because it just makes too much sense. And he's always been a guy who adapts. He can be a guy who brings the ball down the court half the time, or at least gets the ball and like runs a set, and then he's getting the ball to Love and like, or running a pick and roll with Love, where he's making the decision in the pick and roll, or he's the pick guy for Kyrie. They did this in the playoffs, and it was really, really kind of interesting to watch them kind of figure it out. I think that clears space for him in the lane, because if Kyrie's the ball handler, LeBron's setting the pick, LeBron can get tons of easy looks, because Kyrie became insane at finishing inside last year. He developed this really, really crafty, off the top of the glass finish. LeBron might get, if they do this, and I don't know how much they will, LeBron setting a pick forces the defense between deciding to either try to stop LeBron James from scoring inside, or trying to stop Kyrie Irving and fouling Kyrie Irving. I think a lot of times the temptation will be to go after Kyrie because LeBron, even if the smart play might be, hey, let's foul LeBron and put him on the line. But LeBron might get a few extra easy looks off as a roller and getting some dunks. And I think that's a way he does it, and or just getting more assists. I think those are two ways that he kind of goes back up a little bit, but maybe not to peak Miami levels, but like at least a little bit up.
No, I don't think we're going to see him at peak Miami. But yeah, he can jump a couple of places from what he finished last season. Another thing to mention as well is that he's been incredibly durable. Now, there's always been a knock on him in fantasy circles, so he's going to sit out games, he's going to rest games. But prior, last season, he missed 13 games. We had that well-publicized break throughout Christmas time, early January. But the year before, 5 games missed. The year before, 6 games. The year before, 4 games. The year before, 3 games. Like, these aren't big chunks of games. Look, he's probably going to have some sort of scheduled rest at some point during the season, but as we mentioned at the start of the show, if Irving is out, then maybe he's not able to do that for as long or when he quite wants to, depending on how the Cavs are traveling. But he's not a guy who's just consistently missing tons and tons of games. Like, it was the first time that he'd played, he'd missed 10 games in the last 4 seasons. It's not something that's a regular thing for LeBron, so I don't think we need to be too concerned about that. Another guy we haven't really touched on is Timofey Mozgov, who came across from Denver in that trade. And much like Kevin Love, again, he's adapting to a new environment. Coming over mid-season, you don't get a chance to practice much, to learn much. Do you see him taking on a bigger role? He only played 25 minutes with the Cavs last season, or do you think he's just going to stay in that 25-minute role, do what he needs to do, form that tandem with Tristan Thompson, adding Varejão in? Or does he, yeah, he is in a contract year, he is a free agent after this year, does he really start to pick his game up?
My guess is that he has a lot of the same role. I just don't know how much him doing more benefits him or the Cavs. Like, I think if he trusted, I think he's the perfect example of a guy who was in Denver, you know, was playing on a bad team and could, like, had more room to try to do different stuff. I think in Cleveland, it showed that he's really, really good at a few things. And if he's in that situation, he can be awesome for you. Ask him to do more might be just too much. I don't think. Like during the finals, when he had that huge game, I think it was like game four, game five, he had like 25 points or whatever. And people were like, why didn't he play the next game in the fourth quarter? It's because he's really good, but he also has his limitations. He's not a guy you can throw the ball to in the block and he's not going to score for you. He's going to get his points off second chance points. He's going to get his points off pick and roll. He's going to get his points as a decent mid-range guy off as like a safety valve as your fourth or fifth option. Him getting isolated post touches would be kind of negligent for what he is. I mean, maybe one or two a game if you're playing a team with a small center, he gets a mismatch, you just take advantage of it. But as a regular thing, especially with taking away touches from Kyrie, LeBron, Kevin Love, even JR or like someone like that, I think it's kind of, that'd be kind of crazy. So I think a lot of what you saw last year with the Cavs, like if you look at that stat line, I think that's kind of what you expect again.
Yeah. Look, he ranked for me 108th last season. I've got him probably about 120th. Just that slight impact of Varejão coming back might drop him slightly, but even in the second half of the season, he was 121st. So he's okay, but he doesn't, like, if you're picking towards that pick 120 point, you sort of want a guy that you hope can have a big jump and become a top 70, top 75 sort of guy. Whereas I think Mozgov, if he has a big jump, he probably goes from 120 to 105. Like, he's not going to become all of a sudden a 20 and 10 guy with two blocks and three assists and start hitting threes or anything like that. He's going to be solid. He's going to have big games and he's going to also then throw in a 6.5 rebound game next to it. It's just going to be inconsistent, yeah. Basically what we saw from him last season. So I'm not that excited. Look, he's going to be really solid. And this is something that I don't mention enough on podcasts, is if I always say, okay, in those last picks, you know, pick 100, 110 to 140, grab a guy who you think could jump up big. But if you're in a deeper league, like a deep 20-team league, then those picks become in the middle of the draft, and you need to get guys who are going to be solid there. You need to be guys, if I pick a guy, pick 120, then he's probably going to be either between 110 or 130, and that's where Mozgov really fits in. But if it's the end of your draft, you want to go for a big upside guy, and then if it doesn't work, throw Mozgov in later or throw someone else in. But deeper leagues, you want to get those mid-range ones as solid guys who are going to give you nice, consistent value.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I agree. And you look at Mozgov, he's not going to block more than like two shots a game at most. Like, he's going to score. He scored 10 points last year, like 10.6 points a game. Like, you're going to get that. And it just seems like it seemed really odd if he was better than that, it'd just be something chaotic kind of happen.
Yeah, there'd have to be injuries to Thompson and Love, and he's running the whole front court basically by himself. And it's just, it could happen and anything can happen, but it just doesn't seem likely to be on the cards at this point. Right, we're almost done here, Chris. Got a couple of questions that I'm going to be asking everyone on these preview shows. Who's your favorite player on this team?
For me, it's Kyrie. Okay. Love's really close because I love watching him in Minnesota, and I obviously love LeBron. But Kyrie was the guy, when I started writing about the Cavs, Kyrie was, I think he was just after, like, it was like right when he got picked is when I got into NBA blogging. And he's just been so fun to watch. I thought he was awesome before LeBron. I think he got kind of like undervalued then. I think he, to an extent, is now, just because of like the perception of his defense is still kind of off. And maybe that's me being like a homer or whatever, but Kyrie, he's just so fun to watch. Him going off for me, like when he had that game against the Spurs last year where he was just, you know, just unbelievable. It's just so fun to watch. He becomes a video game.
I think everyone will remember that game forever.
I will remember that game for like a long time. And it was such a bummer to see him get when he got hurt. It was such a bummer. And he's just so good. He's just, his handles are unbelievable. And he's just gotten so much better. He's really, really special. And watching him from day one, for me, being like, because when LeBron was starting off, I was like 10 or 11 years old. Like, I caught up, and I've watched, you know, I've watched old tape, and I've watched games on YouTube and stuff, but I've got to witness Kyrie from the beginning, and that's been really, really fun. And it's kind of made him like my favorite player in this team.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to be a homer with Irving either, because he was born in Melbourne, where I'm from.
Yeah.
And I agree that he's fantastic in terms of watching him. I want to know what the overall impression of him is over there, you know, in Ohio. Over here, the general thought that I get is that people don't really rate him as high as they should. They don't respect him for as good a player as what he is. As I was mentioning earlier, when we say, okay, yeah, maybe he'll come back and play less than 30 minutes, that doesn't happen. He's closer to the level of being with Durant than he is to being with guys like Monte Ellis or something like that. He's much closer to that elite superstar, this guy does everything, we give him all the minutes sort of role. How is he perceived over there?
Cavs fans love him. At least the Cavs fans I interact with, like, love him. Cleveland Sports Talk Radio is a little hot takey on Kyrie.
Okay.
But, you know, Sports Talk Radio in America is just constant takes. So it is what it is. I think at least like Fear the Sword, our community like loves Kyrie. We had people the other day when we brought up the article, like saying, you know, the report that he might be out till January. We had people saying that watching the Cavs just wasn't going to be as fun.
Yep.
When he's out, which is kind of true. I think you're like hardcore Cavs fans, like love him. I think the ones who kind of hopped on the bandwagon a little bit last year and are, you know, kind of buy into the idea, like the straight up position, like when they're watching us, like positions are your rigid thing. Like if you play point guard, you have to be passing. I think though he rubs people the wrong way because he's a scorer, and not like a passer. And I think. There's like a split. I think more people like him than don't, but I think some people do have kind of a misguided view of like what he is and how good he is. Cause like, I think if you look at point guards in the NBA right now, I think clearly Russ and CP3 and Steph are like those guys.
Yep.
Like they're like they're franchise players. Like, but Kyrie's like for me, probably four. Like him more than
he's right.
I love John Wall, but I'd take Kyrie over John Wall. Depending on your team construction and everything, like picking a vacuum, I'm taking Kyrie. He's like right there behind those guys. And he's also like, I think he's 23 or 24. Like he's still super young. He's going to get better. I think if they have another really good year this year and he's really, really good, he might get to the point where he's like at getting close to the popularity of LeBron. Like no one will ever pass that. As long as LeBron isn't, but I mean, people in Cleveland like hate LeBron for a variety of reasons, but that's a whole other conversation.
My next question is, who's your favorite all-time player on this team? So over the history of you watching the Cavs, who's your favorite player on this team forever? Or is it Kyrie?
Kyrie, I wouldn't say Kyrie. He'd probably be like the guy, but I love Z. I love Jonas Valanciunas. He was a guy that, you know, like watch like one of the first guys, and just like knowing everything he went through and like reading about him and just what a good guy he is. And you know, works over in the front office. But when I got on the history of the Cavs, the guy that just intrigued me most, and it's partially because I'd love to see what it would be like if he played in the NBA now, I find World Be Free hilarious. I find like his name, like his style would have been like hilarious in today's NBA. Like he would have been a Vine superstar. That being said, I love Mark Price. Like those 80s Cavs teams are awesome. Mark Price is awesome. And he's like, he really could shoot. He's a good passer. He was really smart. He's another guy, I think, like if you look at his career numbers, he did not shoot a lot of threes because of how the game was played at the time. And he was a pretty good 3-point shooter. I think he would have been like another guy that would have been awesome today. He might have been like a little, like the speed would have been maybe been an issue, but he's a really good shooter. Those 80s Cavs teams are like really fun, and I love Mark Price. Like he's the guy that like when I went back and watched games, that I was like, dang, he's awesome. Larry Nance and all those guys are fun too, but I think aside from Kyrie, you'd go Mark Price, Z, Delonte West, And I love Delonte and World Be Free. Delonte is, like, I love Delonte. I find him fascinating for a variety of reasons. But Delonte, when he was with the Cavs, was just, with the LeBron Cavs, was just awesome. Like, he was so good, and he was just, had, like, this, like, persona about him. It was really fun to watch him, like, kind of figure himself out and try to be really, really good. It was awesome.
Mark Price was the guy I had down for this answer as well. And you look through his numbers. His first two seasons as a starter, so that's his second and third season in the league, he's a point guard, obviously. He shot 51 and 53% from the field. He shot 88 and 90% from the line. He shot 49 and 44% from three in those two seasons. He had five seasons in his 12 season career of shooting over 40% from three. He just had some crazy, like, there's like a year here, he had 19.5 points, 9 assists, 2.1 threes a game, 90% from the line, you know, 1.6 steals. He had a season where he had 2.6 steals. Like, these numbers are crazy. I mean, when you look back and I love going through these old numbers and looking at these players. I did Larry Bird the other day, and his numbers are out of control. They were just crazy. You know, Jordan and Magic and Hakeem. And you forget that, like, Mark Price is up there in, like, he was a first round fantasy guy for 4 or 5 years in a row, or maybe even 6 years in a row, just of putting up these crazy numbers. And you forget how good he was. And the numbers now, you look at him and go, if a player was doing that now and shooting, like, he legitimately had a 50-40-90 season in his third year, 53 from the field, 44 from three, and 90% from the free throw line. If someone did that now, it'd be like Kyle Korver was approaching it, and we're hearing about it forever. But Mark Price did it as a point guard and was taking, you know, a massive amount of shots. He was really, really good and very, very underrated. And the other thing that I like about Mark Price is he played in that era with those fantastic Cavs jersey with the basket in the V, which are my favorite Cavs jerseys.
Yeah, those Cavs jerseys are awesome, and I want them to. I wish they used them. Like, I wish, they did a wine colorway, yes, with gold Cavs, like, and that just looks sick. Mark Price is awesome. I really wanted him, before they hired Blatt, I would have been really intrigued to see him as the Cavs coach. He interviewed for the job, and I don't know how serious he was considered, and I think he's coaching at Charlotte, University of Charlotte right now.
Yeah,
I think he's
coaching
as a college head coach now. But he was always awesome. And
He was a shooting coach somewhere last season, I think. I think he was a shooting coach for Kid Gilchrist. Yeah.
Yeah, he was Kid Gilchrist's shooting coach, who Small World played, bring in conference. He played high school ball with Kyrie. They were on the same high school team.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
I
really wanted the cat to get Gilchrist. The others at Deion Waiters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, it didn't work out so well. I think we're pretty much done here, Chris. Anything you want to chime in with the Cavs? You want to add anything extra to this?
No, I just want to say thanks for having me on. I appreciate it, and I had a lot of fun.
Not a problem. Now, make sure you are following Chris. Give us your Twitter handle again.
My Twitter is CWMWrights.
CWMWrights. Go and follow him over there. Follow me at redrock_bball, and check out all of Chris's stuff, which he will tweet out. You can find him on Hardwood Paroxysm and on Fear the Sword. And don't forget to go and check out me on Basketball Monster now. So head across and check out everything that's happening at Basketball Monster that I have started there as of today, but I'm going to be doing a lot of stuff over there, and you will find this podcast over there too. So if you are listening to this podcast for the first time from Basketball Monster, welcome, and I hope you enjoyed it. Subscribe on iTunes and leave a review. That is always super helpful in getting the podcast up the rankings and in providing information to potential advertisers and sponsors and all that sort of stuff, just to help everything grow. It would be awesome if you guys could do all of that. Chris, once again, thank you for coming on. It was very enlightening.
Yeah, and thank you again. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. See ya.